യോന്തപ്രവിശ്യമമവാചുമിമാം പ്രസുപ്താം സഞ്ജീവയതി അഖിലശക്തിധരസുധാംന അന്യാംശ്ച ഹസ്തചരണശ്രവണത്വഗാദീൻ പ്രാണാന്നമോ ഭഗവതേ പുരുഷായ തുഭ്യം. ടുഡേ വി ഹാവ് എ വെരി വെരി ഇൻട്രസ്റ്റിംഗ് ടോപ്പിക്. ദോസ് ഓഫ് യു മേ ഹാവ് ലിസൺ ടു ഭാഗവത പ്രവചൻ in traditional temple settings, or in India there is a traditional way of reading and expounding the Purana, it's a mythological work. Well, there are many wonderful things in this great text, even from our modern perspective. To give a short introduction to the structure of the text, it is a huge classical work, 18,000 verses, 12 cantos and 335 chapters, written by the great ancient sage and philosopher known as Vyasa. Now, it begins with a story, a very interesting story, which has got a very deep message for our own times, even for this information age, or IT age, or artificial intelligence age. The story begins like this. A great king, his name is Parikshit. He was the grandson of one of the Pandava brothers, Arjuna. And one day he was in a hunting expedition in a forest. He was exhausted, hungry and thirsty. He enters into a cave where an old sage was sitting immersed in meditation. And because the king was so well known as a very noble, as a very wise, a very spiritual person, that was his reputation. He was such a great man. But when he became so exhausted, then somehow he lost his balance. And when he found this sage sitting immersed in meditation, he thought that he was being slighted, he was being insulted, he was not being recognized or respected, honored, as every king would expect. Even a great man like Parikshit also had his own identity with this monarchy, with this kingdom. So he expected to be honored and recognized, which did not happen, and the sage sat there immersed in meditation. His name was Samika. Now, when the king felt that he was being slighted, he came out, he was angry, and he went around and found a dead snake lying in the hermitage grounds. He lifted that dead snake with his bow and put it on the neck of the sage as a garland. It's a terrible insult. But the sage did not know anything about it. He was immersed in meditation. After some time, his son came. His son's name was Singhi. So he came and he found his son, his father, in this terrible condition, and he became very angry and he cursed. Whoever may have done such a terrible, heinous deed, he will die of snake bite on the seventh day from now. The whole story unfolds, how the story moves around, and it became the genesis, the seed of a great classic. Is supposed to be the greatest and most important devotional philosophical text in Indo-Vedantic tradition. Today you find the Hare Krishna, ISKCON, all the huge temples, they're all built up on this book only. This is a central book, Bhagavata Purana. Oh, Swaminarayan Mandir, huge temples, they build billions of dollars. These are textbooks that they follow. So its influence continues even in this 21st century. So I'm trying to show. So this king did such a terrible thing, and he was cursed by the sage's son, for doing such a terrible thing to his father, an insult to his father. Okay, now after some time, the sage woke up from his meditation and he came to know of the terrible curse that his own son had put on the king. And then he sent his disciples to inform the king. Unfortunately, his son Sringi had put a curse on him. And now when the king heard about this news, see how he responds. That's a very important eye-opener to the exalted, the highly civilized culture that is reflected in this book. When this all-powerful monarch, the king, the emperor, came to know that a humble sage and his son, and it's not sage, sage actually scolded his son for putting a curse on the king. They did not know who had done it. The son said, well, whoever have done it will die of snake bite, my great snake Takshaka, on the seventh day from now. Now, when the king was informed about this, he did not get angry. He smiled. Then he reflected on his own deed. What did I do to deserve this? And he concluded, well, I do deserve this. I do deserve this punishment, for though I'm the king, I could not have done it. And you can imagine the exalted culture. On the one hand, the king's own helplessness. When he was hungry and thirsty, he became angry. He put the snake, that snake on the neck of a sage. But the same king later on, when he informed about this, well, I did something wrong and deserve this punishment. And then what he did, so he knew he was going to die on the seventh day. And what he did, he renounced his kingdom, his comforts, his palace, his everything. And then he reached the river Ganga. And then when he actually renounced his kingdom, there is a powerful statement that is found in the text. Addeva rajyam velam ruddhakosham prakopita brahma kulanalo me dakadu abhadrasya punarme punarname abhut papiyasi dhihi dija deva gopika. I am such a great sinner. He didn't kill a sage. He didn't punish physically. He did something that was mischief, putting a dead snake. But that he thinks, it is a terrible crime I have done. So to think, for a king to interpret his own deed, which compared to modern times, if you look at the history of the world, genocides, executions, crusades, so many terrible things. Even for saying a word, people are being killed in the name of religion and for God. Now here you find a king says, well, I did such a terrible thing. And this humble sage, he put a curse on me. The curse is a fire. Brahma kulanalo, the curse of a sage, the son was also a sage, is like a mighty fire. Let it destroy my armies, my treasury, ruddhakosham, and my army, Belam. Let it burn and destroy all that I possess, because I did such a terrible thing. And then what he says, middhakadu abhadrasya. I am a terrible sinner who does something wrong. So such a person, well, let me perish as a result of this terrible deed. And the king left everything behind, came to the bank of Ganga, the holy river, ancient times. He sat there and he wanted to spend the rest of his life 7 days on meditation. At that time, a great sage came, Shuka, and he puts a question to Shuka. Now, who are these Shuka? Shuka was the son of Vyasa. And Vyasa was not a very interesting, Vyasa, not an insignificant figure. Vyasa is perhaps the most celebrated name in Hindu mythological tradition. He was the one who edited the Vedas, including the writer of Mahabharata and Bhagavata. Many books he wrote. Great sage, the son of another sage called Parashara. So this Vyasa, as I mentioned, he was the author of the Mahabharata. And after writing all these great books, Mahabharata, more than 100,000 verses, we are discussing in the Stanford Hindu Student Association program, every Sunday online program, we have got 6 o'clock. So this Vyasa himself was an interesting man. He has, in a way, let's say, he was the ancient equivalent of Socrates, Shakespeare, Virgil, Homer, rolled into one. The Vedantic or the Hindu equivalent of, the Indian equivalent of Socrates, the greatest philosopher of ancient Greece. Maybe I'm naming Shakespeare because the well-known figure of our times. I don't compare Shakespeare with Vyasa, for God's sake. But Homer was a great man, great Greek classical writer, and in Latin literature, Virgil. If you can put it all together, it's Vyasa. But that Vyasa was taking medicine for depression. Putting modern language, he was highly depressed. Sitting on the banks of river Saraswati. And at that time, another sage came, Narada. So Narada asked Vyasa, what's the matter with you? Suppose you are the richest man in the world, most celebrated writer, highly recognized. Maybe your name is Gaines' book, a Nobel laureate. And still, you don't get 4 hours of sleep. No peace of mind, totally depressed. Anxiety, neurosis, all these problems. So what's the matter with you? That is what Vyasa was for those times. So Vyasa said, well, my mind is not very happy, though I've written all these books. I have got... His own son, Shuka, was more famous than Vyasa himself. But he was depressed. So Narada told him, you wrote these great books, no doubt. And Narada especially referred to Mahabharata. You know, Mahabharata is a book that analyzes human actions, human destiny, human civilization. And the central theme of Mahabharata is dharma. Dharma may be one important aspect of dharma is constitutional propriety. Ethical propriety, moral propriety combined together. But in Mahabharata, it is essentially is a constitutional propriety. Dharma ideal is neutral. It helps you with some knowledge, information, what you should do, what you should not do. That's what dharma tells you. But what road you should follow, you should take to your own spiritual liberation, dharma doesn't directly instruct you. Dharma tells you do this, or you don't do that, etc. But what is your own specific spiritual path? That dharma doesn't teach you. What people should do, how to worship God, how to meditate, how to gain internal peace through devotion, Mahabharata doesn't teach you. Bhagavad Gita is a small fragment of Mahabharata, but it is immersed in the huge, thick forest of Mahabharata. 700 verses in a book of more than 100,000 verses. So, Narada told him, when you write something that is of some practical help to somebody, then you yourself will be helped. So if you want to really get peace of mind, you should do something to give peace of mind to other people. Then that peace of mind will come to you. So here is a very Namo Bhagavate Tubhyam Vasudevaya Dhimahi
പ്രദ്യുമ്നായ അനിരുദ്ധായ നമസംഘർഷണായ ച ഇതി മൂത്യഭിധാനേന മന്ത്രമൂർത്തി അമൂർത്തികം യജതേ യജ്ഞപുരുഷം ച സമ്യക് ദർശന പുമാൻ. സോ നാരദ ഗിവ്സ് ഇൻസ്ട്രക്ഷൻ ടു വ്യാസ, ലുക്ക് ഹിയർ, യു ഷുഡ് ടീച്ച് പീപ്പിൾ ഹൗ ടു വർഷിപ്പ് ദ ഡിവൈൻ. ഗോഡ് ഈസ് ആൻ ഓൾ പെർവേഡിംഗ് റിയാലിറ്റി, ബട്ട് ഹൗ ടു റീച്ച്, ഹൗ ടു കണക്ട് വിത്ത് ദാറ്റ് ഓൾ പെർവേഡിംഗ് റിയാലിറ്റി ത്രൂ യുവർ ഓൺ സ്പിരിച്വൽ ഡിസിപ്ലിൻസ്. And for that, you should do something. This is the instruction given by Narada to Vyasa and the Sukava, the son of that great Vyasa. Now coming back to the text. So Parikshit, King Parikshit came to the river Ganga, and there were many sages have assembled, including Vyasa, Sukha and others. At that time, because they heard about this great man who had an all-powerful emperor who did something almost silly, stupid, but it's not a terrible crime by modern standards, putting a dead snake, not a living snake, but dead snake on the neck of a sage. Certainly an insult, but you won't recommend capital punishment for that. But the king condemned himself to capital punishment because he had such an exalted understanding of what is proper, what is dharma, what is propriety, spiritual propriety, not constitutional propriety, because constitutional propriety can be terribly improper from an ethical sense. That's an important problem we are facing in modern times. Constitutional propriety can be the law of the jungle, but ethical propriety is the law of the spirit. So that's why Vyasa was asked by Narada to write Bhagavata Purana. Now, Parikshit knew about this, and Parikshit puts a question to Sukha, who is the son of Vyasa. Atha prichami samsiddhim yoginam paramam gurum purushasyeha yat karyam mriyamanasya sarvada. This is a question. It's a very famous question. That's the very heart of Bhagavata Purana. Because the entire Bhagavata Purana is a response to this question. What should a person do with his life? Mriyamanasya. Mriyamana is a person whom death is staring at his face. Suppose death is staring at you. You come to know you have just a few days to live. Then you understand a different value of every minute, every second, your entire life. It is not something that you can escape from. Maybe after 100 years, if you eat organic food, take care of your health, every day going to gymnasium, whitening the teeth and darkening the hair, still you can't expect more than 100 years, or maybe not more than that. So, still, it is waiting. Maybe after 100 years, it will knock at the door. So, what should a person do with his life and existence? Mriyamanasya sarvada. In this present context of the story, Parikshit was condemned to die in 7 days. So he knew he had only 7 days to live. So how he should spend the rest of his life, 7 days? That's the question. Now I can take you to an entirely different perspective. Let us stop here for a minute. Let us come to Dostoevsky, whom I consider to be the greatest name in Western literary tradition. Just because he wrote two well-known books, one is The Idiot and The Brothers Karamazov. The Idiot, the main protagonist is Prince Minsky. He is as Christ-like as you can possibly imagine, as Dostoevsky himself wanted to paint the picture of a character. He's as close to Christ as possible. Prince Minsky. He narrates an interesting story. It is very similar to Parikshit's own vision, but a different angle. In the story, there's a criminal. A criminal is waiting for his execution. And he has 3 hours to go. Now he's thinking, well, what? He has only 3 hours. So what will I do with my life? So he won't think of going to
Las Vegas or Hawaii, spending, buying $1 billion or going on a cruise. He won't do that. Rather, he'll think of what I was doing, what he was doing all his life. Preparation for some higher life. It may be the most confirmed agnostic atheist also will have to think at some point, what did I do with my life? And what am I going to do when I leave this body behind? If you don't think like that, you should be an absolute, condemned, hardline extremist, or you'll be a total moron. Anyone behind, between these two extremes will have to think of this. So if this criminal is a human being after all, in a way it is actually a narration from Dostoevsky's own personal life, where he was subjected to some kind of mock execution, from which he was, of course, he was saved. He was commuted and sentenced to life imprisonment in Siberia. So he is narrating this thing, this story from his own life into the mind of Prince Minsky, the protagonist of the well-known classic, The Idiot. So this criminal is watching. So he says, no, I have just 1 hour, another hour, maybe a few minutes, etc. So he thinks about his own life. So every minute, every second is precious. So he's thinking about, I did something wrong. When I was a small child in the village, I threw a stone at a dog. I should not have done it. I should repent of it. Oh, I tell a lie to my neighbor. I should not have done it. So he was forgiving himself, because he has a vision of some higher life. Now, but then the point is, he's so tormented because of fear of death. He still has a tormenting memory in The Idiot, because he did not have Vedanta to support him as King Parikshit had. Parikshit, you know what he did? He renounced his kingdom with a smile. No inner torment like the criminal in Dostoevsky's The Idiot. With a smile, he renounced his kingdom, because he knew that even if he doesn't renounce his kingdom will renounce him after some years when he leaves this world. So why not now? So he left his kingdom behind, left his children behind, his converts, his subjects, his army, everything. Then what is that? That's why there is a powerful statement I just read right now, you know, the well-known statement, let me perish because I did something wrong. I did a terrible thing, so I need this punishment, as in the story I already mentioned just now. So when finally he found that a great sage had appeared in front of him, he wanted to put this question to him. Atha prachamisam siddhim yoginam paramam gurum purushasyeha yat karyam mriyamanasi sarvata. So I want to ask you this question. What should a person do? He has only a few days, 7 days to live. Itshodavyam atho japyam yasmartavyam nirviprabhu sattvayam bhajaniyam vajbhuhi yadva vivarliyam. In fact, this continues. His request continues. What he should do, what he should not do. Whom he should worship. How he should spend this lifetime. So, what should be the spiritual discipline you should follow? So, this is the question that Parikshit puts to Shuka when he found he had only 7 days to live. In answer to this, the sage Shuka gives a reply, and the reply is found in 18,000 verses, 335 chapters, and 12 cantos in the Bhagavata Purana. So, bhakti pareshanubhavo viraktihi anyatra chaishatrika ekakalaha prapadyamanasi yadhasnataha situshti pushtikshudubayo anughasam. So, what he says is, when you eat food, you enjoy food and your hunger is gone. You need to drink water, you enjoy the act of drinking water and your thirst is gone. So, every activity produces some kind of positive, pleasant result. But at the same time, there are certain things that can always produce a kind of inner serenity and peace. That's called santosha. And that can happen only when we practice certain spiritual disciplines. And the Bhagavata Purana recommends bhakti as that discipline. Because bhakti or devotion, it connects your mind to some higher transcendental power. You feel you are an instrument in the hands of a higher power. So that devotion purifies our emotions and feelings. At the beginning, we are trying to give a spiritual connection, a spiritual orientation to a natural human relationship. It's called Navadha Bhakti. 9 forms of devotion are taught in the Bhagavata Purana. Sravanam, Girtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Bhada, Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam, etc. If one can keep his mind pure, serene, tranquil and happy. Happiness doesn't mean enjoyment. Here happiness means a state of mind where it doesn't ever feel unhappy because it has given up its quest for happiness. So the best way to avoid confronting unhappiness is to stop looking for happiness all the time. Then there is no room for any kind of unhappiness. So that can be realized only by bringing our mind into some higher spiritual connection. It can be done by listening to great ideas. We listen to a lot of things. Very often, they constitute what you call junk food, which is toxic in nature, which can give us all kinds of illness, different sicknesses. When the physical body eats junk food, toxic food, it falls sick, it dies. When mind eats junk food, mind also falls sick and dies. And the death of the mind can be seen in the symptoms like anxiety, worry, and so on. So to keep the mind healthy, you should give it good food. Just as we keep our body healthy by feeding the body with good food. What is a good food? Good ideas, listening, sravanam, or maybe chanting, reading, thinking, memory, any kind of spiritual activity, either listening, reading, chanting, singing, higher music. There is some music which can take you as far away from God as possible. There is also some music which can take you closer to God. Because music is the royal highway to spirituality when it becomes a spiritual music. So, Bhagavata Purana says, Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasim, Sakhyam, Atmadivedanam. Either pray, not necessarily in a place of worship, in your own room. In fact, the best prayer is the prayer that is done in our own heart. But to be able to do that, we should begin somewhere. And the beginning should be in the kindergarten. And the kindergarten of spiritual life is reading, listening, discussion, and things like that. And then we become spiritually oriented. So, Navadha Bhakti. Then there are different kinds of devotion mentioned in this book. That's a very interesting. The highest devotion, you may call it the highest level of spiritual experience in devotion, is when you don't see anything in the world except God and His presence. So, and this is narrated in the 11th canto, Skandha, in the context of a dialogue between another philosopher king like Parikshit and Nimi. If you talk about Parikshit, you know what happened. Parikshit, finally, when death came, he did not wait for death to knock at his door. He knew it's coming. He opened the door and welcomed him. And he became a spiritually liberated person. He was spiritually liberated. The question you have to keep in mind
അത പൃച്ഛാമി സംസിദ്ധിം യോഗിനാം പരമം ഗുരും പുരുഷ സേയക്കാരിം പ്രിയമാണസി സർവത. ആൻഡ് ദെൻ ഈ സോതവ്യം അതോ ജാപ്യം സ്മർത്തവ്യം ചെന്നിപ്രഭു കർത്തവ്യം ഭജനീയം വ ബ്രൂഹി യദ്വാ വിപര്യം. വി ഹൗ വി ഷുഡ് മെഡിറ്റേറ്റ്, ഹൗ വി ഷുഡ് ഡു, ആൻഡ് ദെൻ വാട്ട് വി ഷുഡ് നോട്ട് ഡു. സോ പരീക്ഷിസ് ഒറിജിനൽ ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻ ഹാസ് ടു സെക്ഷൻസ്. വൺ, വാട്ട് വി ഷുഡ് ഡു ആൻഡ് വാട്ട് വി ഷുഡ് നോട്ട് ഡു. ദിസ് ഈസ് അറ്റ് ദ എൻഡ് ഓഫ് ദി ഫസ്റ്റ് കാൻഡോ. And the second canto begins with the actual beginning, the opening of the Bhagavata narrative. First, Shuka gives the answer what one should not do. He says, unfortunately, if you look around, you find people every day, every minute, every second, they know that what they are chasing, what they are looking for, will not be permanent. Still, they imagine, they're deluded into thinking that a few minutes of enjoyment is the goal of human life, and they lose their spiritual goal. This is the answer to the later part of the question, what one should not do. And answering the first part, what one should do, edavan sankhya yoga abhyam swadharma parinishthaya janma labha parapum samante narayana smriti. Either to practice karma yoga, bhakti yoga, jnana yoga, you should be able to experience the last moment, ante narayana smriti. That is the actually the heart of Bhagavata Purana. You should be able to leave this world with a smile on your face, not looking for the latest bank balance, checkbook and fountain pen. Because you have to leave everything behind. And when you are born again, you won't be born with a checkbook and bank balance. That will belong to somebody else. They won't recognize you as your property. So, ante narayana smriti. Either by doing everything in the name of God, karma yoga, or thinking of God, devotion, or philosophical inquiry, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, karma yoga, any of these yogas, one should be able to leave this world with the memory, with thinking of God, ante narayana smriti. That's how the second canto begins. Now the real purpose of this last minute, I mean, one should be able to remember God the last moment. You know, if you train our mind, now suppose a person decides, well, I will acquire as much money as possible. I will have all the enjoyments in life. And finally, I will think of God. That's not going to happen. Because we cannot really cheat our own mind. We can cheat everyone in this world. But we cannot cheat our own mind. If we try to cheat our mind retaliates. How? Schizophrenia, anxiety, neurosis, depression, phobias, obsession, and all that. These are different forms of mind hitting back. Mind catching you by the throat in retaliation to our own attempts to cheat our own mind. That's an important point. Most of the problems that we're facing today in modern world are the result of our own efforts to cheat ourselves. We can be a well-trained diplomat. You can see in 1938, the Treaty of Munich, the Treaty of Appeasement, Hitler, Neville Chamberlain, Mussolini, and the French Prime Minister all smiling. And Hitler was planning to attack certain land in a few weeks. That sort of thing, diplomacy can work. But we cannot do it with our own mind. We can be diplomatic with everyone else in the world, but not with our own mind. If we try to do that, our mind will hit you back. And the result is asylum, lunatic asylum, or medicine for psychiatric illness. So here, the meaning is ante narayana smriti. It means we should prepare ourselves for that. For that, in spite of our everyday responsibilities and duties, we should keep our mind somehow connected to the Lord, to the divine. Then what happens is, slowly our actions, our thoughts, emotions and feelings all will get a spiritual orientation. That is the meaning of Antenarayana Smriti. And such a person, how he experiences devotion, that is mentioned in the 11th canto, in Ekadasa Skandha, in the Nimi Navayogi Samvada, the dialogue between philosopher King Nimi, in some place called Janaka, and nine sages. Kavir Hari Andariksha Prabuddha Pippalayana Avihotaru Durmilas Chamasakara Bhajanaka. Nine, that we are not concerned with that right now, but just mention this, the list of the nine sages. So one question that the king puts his sages is very, very pertinent and very, very relevant. Who is the highest devotee of God? Now, if somebody asks you who is a spiritual person who is going to church every Sunday, going to temple every day, he does kumbhabhishega, he pays to the priest, or he goes to church, pays the priest there and builds some place, at least these people are not doing any harm to others in the name of God. That's a great thing. But there are some traditions where if you can hate everyone, then God will be very happy with you. That is terrible diabolic that we are witnessing in today's world. So in the Bhagavata Purana tells you that if you can see the presence of God in everyone and you can see everyone in God, that is the highest state of spirituality. So you cannot hate anyone. Otherwise we may think, my God is on, he belongs to my party. So he is, because I am voting for him, so I can do whatever I want. So my God will encourage me whatever crimes I commit. That is a very, very, very toxic interpretation of religion and spirituality. You can find the very opposite of here in Bhagavata Purana. He says, you cannot hate an insect. And you cannot do harm to anyone or anything in the world. You cannot even destroy forests and try to be spiritual. Because by destroying forest, you are disturbing the rhythmic balance of nature. That itself amounts to some kind of act of violence. So there is no luxury of placing my God and hating everyone else who worships God in a slightly different fashion. So, sarva bhudeshu yapasyed bhagavad bhavam atmanaha bhudani bhagavadi atmani esha bhagavadottamaha. Remember the definition of a devotee of God. Not somebody who reads a book every day, or somebody prays the priest every day, or somebody who is fighting for his God. We think sometimes that our God will be very happy if we can fight for him. And if we can do terrible things on his name, our God will be very happy. That God certainly can be anything else except God. But Bhagavata Purana tells you, you cannot hate anyone. An insect, an amoeba, living on nature. You cannot cut down trees and be a devotee of God. You cannot cause anything that puts the entire universe in a state of imbalance. So that's why sarva bhudeshu pasyet bhavat bhavam atmanaha bhudani bhagavati atmani esha bhagavatamaha. You should be able to see God in everyone, and you should be able to see everyone in God. Esha bhagavatamaha means he's the highest devotee of God. Then of course this is a very high, is a high order, very high level. But you can try to reach there. To begin with, once Isharita Dadhineshu, Balisheshu, Dishasucha, Prema, Maitri, Kriba, Upesha, Yakirodisa, Madhimaha. Then another kind of devotee is explained here. Somebody who cannot see God in everyone, who can't see everyone in God. He cannot see everyone in God. The second person is this. Well, you pray to God in the morning, you go to your place of worship, then you associate with people like yourself, like other spiritual seekers. You should be friendly with other spiritual seekers. You have sympathy for those who are trying to understand God. that will slowly take you to a higher level. The next stage, I mean below that stage. The first highest state is the most exalted, called the PhD of devotion, PhD, you know, of religion is doctorate of spirituality is Sarva Bhudeshu Pashit Bhagavad Bhavamatmanaka Bhudani Bhagavadi Atmanesha Bhagavatama. The one who sees God in everyone, sees everyone in God, the highest. Below that, let's say post-graduation, is Ishwari Tadadhineshu Barisheshu Dishasucha Prema Maitri Kripa Ubeksha Yakrodi Samadhyamaka. You should have devotion to God. You should be in good friendship, good relationship with other relatives, other devotees. And also you should have association with like-minded people. You should keep a long distance away from skeptics and those who are very cynical, whose association can take you away from your own spiritual path. This is the next level below. The third, the lowest level is this. Archaya meva hari puja sadhikati nachatad bhakteshu anyeshu yakkarodhi sa prakritaka. The lowest. They worship their God, but they can't feel the presence of God anywhere else. That is no problem. After all, you have to begin kindergarten. But we should not interpret kindergarten as Oxford. That's the only problem. If somebody says, I got a PhD from kindergarten, it's like saying, I go and do this ritual every day, so I'm a great spiritual person. It's like claiming, well, I got a PhD from kindergarten. Not possible. Or defining or interpreting or mistaking kindergarten for Oxford. It's not possible. So, Bhagavata Purana, on the one hand, it begins with this strange, great narrative. The comparison between Parikshit and the character which is depicted in Prince Minsky's narration, Dostoevsky's Idiot. It just reveals a certain aspect of human psyche in our search for higher values. That's why I began with that narration, because I don't think there is anything in world literature which comes even close to Parikshit's predicament, except this character in Prince Minsky's narration, which is Dostoevsky's The Idiot. So anyway, so I was trying to give a very, as far as possible, very relevant interpretation, because some kind of higher ideal is depicted in the Bhagavata Purana that gives us a different, a higher sense of meaningfulness of our life as a whole, a new idea of meaningfulness, relevance of the minutes, the hours and the years and months and days that we have in our life can be used for a higher purpose in a very creative, constructive manner. So Bhagavata is not just a book. Today, wherever you find in this world, the huge devotional movements, which attracts millions of people, Hare Krishna movement is one, ISKCON is one, Swaminarayan Mandir is huge temple structures in different parts of the world. All these are different attempts to understand the higher devotional philosophy of Bhagavata Purana. So thank you. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.